Welcome to Peace at Last, Memories of VE Day, a special two-part podcast marking 80 years since the end of the Second World War in Europe. I'm Donald Morrison, and in this podcast, I speak to women living in Parklands care homes across the north of Scotland who lived and served during the conflict. Their voices have been dimmed by age, but not their spirit. In this episode, we meet women who served during the war, including top-secret codebreakers who helped turn the tide of the conflict. Their stories speak of duty and humility, and the quiet determination that helped sustain Britain through its darkest days. We begin with Dr. Jean Munro, a resident at Lymore in Granton. Jean served in one of the most secretive roles of the war, as a codebreaker at Bletchley Park. Working in Hut 6, she was part of the team that helped crack the German Enigma machine. Now 101, Jean reflects on a chapter of her life that remained classified for decades.
My name is Jean Mary Munro.
Jean, can you tell me a little about your early life before the war began?
Well, I was at school first, and then university. We were able to stay at the university until the end of the year in which you were 20. And after that, you were called up.
And where did you study?
Well, I studied it was London University, but we were evacuated to Cambridge.
And tell me, what did you study at university?
History.
Can you tell me where you were and what you were doing when you first heard that war had broken out in 1939?
When it broke out, we were on holiday in Ullapool. We were in a hotel, actually, in Ullapool. And before the war, before it actually broke out, first one person was called away, and then another, and then another. So it was a bit gradual.
Somebody told me that you were a codebreaker during the war.
I was codebreaking, yes, that's right. Yes, I was doing something, recording code numbers and things or something, and somebody knew me and decided that they would up me a little bit and put me onto code breaking.
Can you tell me where you were stationed?
Yes, we were at Bletchley.
You were one of the famous Bletchley Park code breakers?
Well, yes.
What kind of work were you doing?
Oh, testing mostly things that the machines had thrown up as possible stops. And then we put them onto things like typewriters and worked through some of the German. And if we got a known call sign or something, obviously German, that was it. And we passed the setting on to somebody, and they went off and did it. We never saw any of the results at all.
Was your work kept secret at the time, even from friends
and
family?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It wasn't until about 1980, I think, that my parents knew what I was doing. They knew where I was working, but they didn't know what at.
What was the reaction of your family?
Oh, I think they just thought that was quite good. Glad I was able to do something sensible.
And was it difficult going to work day in, day out, and not being able to tell friends and family what you were doing?
I think the war atmosphere was such that I don't think it was a difficulty. I mean, I think they just accepted that you didn't say what you were doing. And you didn't, in fact, say until about 1980, they began to tell other people about it.
Did you have a sense then that you were part of something big, something historic?
No, I don't think so. I think we thought all war work was important and, No, I don't think we did.
You were just playing your part like everybody else?
Yeah.
How did you first hear the news that the war in Europe was over?
I suppose through BBC, probably, but I don't actually remember. It was sort of working up to it in a way. I mean, it wasn't a complete surprise.
At this moment of Thanksgiving, His Majesty the King speaks to his peoples and his fighting forces throughout the world.
But today, we give thanks to God for a great deliverance. The enemy who drove all Europe into war has been finally overcome.
Do you remember how you felt when you heard the news that the war was over?
Yes, but there again, I think it wasn't a surprise. I think we've been working up to it, so I think, you know.
There must have been a sense of relief, at least.
Oh, I think so, yes.
Do you remember at the time, with the war behind us, a new government under Attlee? Was that a time for hope after the war?
Oh, I think so, but not with Attlee, I'm afraid.
Did you miss Churchill?
Yes, yes.
What did Churchill mean to you as somebody living during the war?
Oh, a symbol. A symbol of hope.
Netherhar resident Patricia Innes, who turned 100 earlier this year, grew up in Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and worked in the naval office in Colombo, helping to decipher coded messages. She recalls a constant fear of attack from Japanese forces and the pressures of wartime intelligence work. Patricia, what are your memories of growing up in Sri Lanka or Ceylon?
I was born there. My father was a tea planter. And I was at school. My mother taught me to begin with, and then I was at school at Christ's Hospital, Hartford. But during the war, I worked for the naval office. They didn't have conscription, so I couldn't be a Wren. I was, I think, called a civilian employee working for ciphers and codes. But the work I did was top secret. And we had a, because at that time there was a threat from the Japanese invading Colombo. So we had a basement where we could go down. And these distress signals used to come through, all disjointed, because they were from people who had either been torpedoed at sea or in the Navy. But it was an interesting job.
Were you ever scared?
I think I was too busy to be scared. I just tried to do the best I could. David, my first husband, to begin with, he was a prisoner of war. He was taken in Singapore as a prisoner of war, and he worked on the Burma Indian row. All he had was a wheelbarrow. But he ended up as a liaison. He was in the army as a liaison officer. He was a very brave man.
Do you remember hearing the news that the war in Europe was over in 1945?
Oh, it came through the naval office.
Do you remember how you felt when the war came to an end?
Oh, obviously, relief.
Go Glen Isla resident Mamie Cree was called up from Keith to Dalkeith during the war, a big upheaval since the furthest she'd ever been was Elgin. Now 101, she shares memories of wartime work, the dances she loved, and her future husband of 75 years. Her son Stuart joins me to share a cherished photograph of Mamie in uniform, and the very berry she wore in it, lovingly kept all these years.
I was called up when I was 19. I was very unhappy because all my friends, well, they didn't get called up, and I was annoyed.
So, do you remember where you were and how you felt when you first heard that the war had broken out?
Well, it was a Sunday, and I was in Keith then. I remember crying because I thought my dad was going to get called up. But it was myself who got called up, not my dad.
You had to go to Edinburgh, didn't you?
When you got called up, you went to Dalkeith for your training.
And tell me about the work you did in Dalkeith.
Well, we just got trained. You know, I cried between Keith and Dalkeith.
I'm sure. It must have been a scary experience leaving home.
Elgin was as far as
And so I understand that you worked in the payroll department in Edinburgh.
The PA office.
And how did you enjoy that work?
I enjoyed it, yeah.
You were telling me earlier you were lucky because you didn't have to live in military accommodation.
Oh, I didn't have.
One of the blessings of the war was that you went to Edinburgh and you met your husband. Can you tell me how that came about?
Well, we used to go to dances at night, and my husband and I went to this same dance hall.
So love at first sight, was it?
No, he was a good dancer. He was one of the good dancers.
If my maths is right, you were 21 just a few days before the end of the war. So that must have been a pretty special birthday for you.
Oh, aye. It was. Well, for everybody, it was calls up. It was special. It was a special birthday.
So obviously this year is the 80th anniversary of the end of the war. What do you remember about the celebrations in Princess Street?
Oh, I thought they were great.
After the war, when she returned eventually to live in Keith with my father, she began a lifetime of community service. She was prominent in the church youth club to start with. She helped with that, my father, and then over the years, every women's organisation and older person's organisation, I think in the town she had some involvement in, from WRVS through to things like the now defunct Gas Federation, and the old was it over 50s club, and then Maracaibo Club, and she was more than just a member, she was an active, and in fact she was a chair, and the guides, you were a brown owl, weren't you?
Aye.
Mm-hmm. She underplays her part in the war, although it wasn't active service. Women didn't, they weren't armed, so they weren't put in the front line. But she worked in Edinburgh in the Pay Corps, and my father worked there, and he actually worked in the same regiment because he was blind in one eye. He could work in the army, he could enlist, he couldn't go front line either. So.
Upset him,
sir. It upset him, yeah.
And is this something from the war?
That's her. That's the. You'll see it up on that.
Oh, yes.
That's it there. The same one.
So you've kept this hat all these years?
I came across it the other day. Your father and my grandfather kept it, but then
But that's your mum's?
That's my mother's, aye. It's the one that's over here. And when my grandfather died, it came with his effects to my mother. And I've keep it now, so.
How does it feel to see that again after all these years?
She was pretty speechless when I took it in the other day. Right. I was delighted, she was delighted, but I could see she was quite
emotional.
Aye. Means a great deal to her.
Now let's hear from Lymore resident Edith McCready. Originally from Battersea in London, she was just 15 when the war broke out. At 17, she joined the RAF and was posted to North Africa, where she met her future husband. I'm joined by Lymore manager Pamela Cummings.
Well, at that time, if you didn't join up, you got called up. And once you were called up, you could land anywhere, in a factory, anywhere. And I never wanted that. If I was going, I wanted to go where I went, see. So they had these ones that were calling up. So I asked, I had to ask my parents first, because otherwise you couldn't go. My mum wasn't very pleased. I was only about, 17 when I joined. And I went to the Air Force then. I met some lovely people in there. I still keep in touch with some of them. Still nice. And they write to me, I write to them. And that's how we've always kept in touch.
Edie, what was it like working in the RAF surrounded by men? There weren't many women in the RAF, were there?
They seemed gradually to join up, and everybody knew everybody. I still hear from people when I was in the Air Force.
The Air Force, yeah.
So she came sometimes, the Queen, our Queen.
Did she?
Yeah. She didn't stay long.
No.
But in passing, she would come by and speak to everybody. So that was nice, because they spoke to you very nicely.
Were you in London when it was bombed during the Blitz?
That's where I was stationed, down there.
Was it quite bad?
London was terrible.
Was it?
It was, because my brothers were there as well.
We end with a few final reflections from Dr. Jean Munro, a codebreaker at Bletchley Park. I was reading historians say that codebreakers like you helped shorten the war by 2 to 4 years. How does that make you feel?
Oh, I'm very glad.
In doing so, you helped potentially save tens or hundreds of thousands of lives.
I never thought of it that way, but if I think about it now, I think I'm very glad.